Hello, welcome back to our two-part special Loosehead's podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union with DTH van der Merwe this week, and it's great to talk to DTH about his club career in part one and the work he's doing with the Loosehead's Foundation. But part two of this podcast focuses on his international career with Canada. He's only one of a few players to have played at four World Cups, so it was great to get DTH on that, and also sort of what the future holds for Canadian rugby. I know my colleague Joe Harvey goes into great depth about the MLR and Canadian rugby in particular, and DTH sort of echoes Joe's thoughts on that, which is great to hear DTH speak so positively about the league over in the States and Canada as well. So part two of this podcast sees DTH talk about his international career, plus he picks his Mars 15 as well, so hope you enjoy. Yeah, we'll probably have Canadian fans now, DTH, screaming at the podcast saying, why haven't we asked DTH about Canada? But we're going to come on to it now, because I think you said you don't like personal accolades, but I've been reading a few articles. People do rate you so highly and arguably one of Canada's all-time greatest players, DTH. But let's take you back to sort of that first World Cup that we mentioned at the start with, playing in 2007. I mean, what was that kind of experience like for you? As you said before, that you were kind of there for experience, but then you go on and play those pool matches.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people have asked me this, especially in this last World Cup, because then, you know, it's my fourth World Cup. They always say, well, think back to 2007. But honestly, I think I was so young and naive that I didn't take it in. Like, the things I remember are small things that's, you know, nonchalant kind of things. I don't remember much of the games. I think I was just too young and dumb about, you know, where I was and what I was doing. Like, obviously, getting to my first World Cup is special, and singing the anthem was special, because that, and hearing that, it's something that sticks in my head is the World and Union song. That always, you know, brings special memories to me. But honestly, the memories are quite faded about my 2007 World Cup. I just didn't really take it in as a youngster. And but I do have a little CD disc that I, with all the photos on it. So someday when I get back and I can sit back and relax and, you know, think about, you know, looking through these photos, and hopefully the memories will stream back.
And one of the things what we noticed with your career with Canada is that you've always tried to gain that qualification automatically for the World Cup. And I know the last few attempts you've had to qualify away from the usual route. Have you felt pressure on the Canadian rugby team to take that next step? Because I know in 2019 it meant the world to you personally to get the club over the line, to the country, to get to the World Cup.
Yeah, I think so. For every time we did qualify, so that while the 2007 one, I wasn't really part of it. Actually, I played Barbados game. I did play that. So that was quite an easy game to qualify. I don't remember if that was a repechage or not. But then for 2011 and 2015, we qualified through the Americas thing, which, you know, at that time, Canadian rugby was doing well. And we were able to beat America. We were quite confident in beating them. Come to 2019, you know, after that 2015 World Cup, America started taking off, you know, developing better than us and doing more than us in terms of development. And we can't win a game against them from 2015 onwards. And so that, you know, put us in that repercharge thing. Now, I know there's, in the rugby league thing, there's that $1 million game that they, you know, played. No, I think that repercharge for us was something like $10 million.
Really?
Over the span of the World Cup cycle, you know, for the... So if we don't make it, we collapse the whole Canadian system, you know. It goes completely bust. So that was, yeah, that as a national team experience, that was the worst time of my career, is playing in that repechage. I think it was badly organized by World Rugby. It was played on one field, back-to-back games. Like, what professional, you know, team would play back-to-back games? You don't even let your youngsters play on your field before a game. So then, let alone Marseille, I think it is, and the weather, it was horrendous. So it was so wet. Like, we were just like, we went into those games with zero game plans. We had three moves, strike, you know, just strike off the line out, strike off the scrum, just hit up with our 12, and we just play same way. That's all we did, because then we felt that we could still score with that. So the pressure was just immense. Like, I was falling out with a coach and stuff during that time, because I was like, listen, this is ridiculous. We can't not go in with like a game plan. We should at least try strike plays. But, you know, he believed that we're a better team on paper, and with the guys we had there, we should be able to play the most simple rugby and just stick to that simple rugby and still get over the line. So we only had ourselves to beat, really. You know, that's kind of what his view on it was. And yeah, probably he was probably right. You know, it took me a while to kind of realize that. But ultimately we got there and got it done. But yeah, no, it's not a nice experience.
And through those qualification methods, DTH, that you mentioned there, you do get the reward of playing in a World Cup. And just before we go on to 2019, I just want to go back to 2015, which obviously over in the UK, and you've mentioned one of the tries that you scored was a favourite, I think, was it against Italy at Elland Road, if that's right in saying. And I remember one you scored at Milton Keynes against France as well. So are those memories something that you do look back on fondness, if 2007 is a bit hazy to remember at the time?
No, it's, you know, that, well, that try against Italy, I get reminded of that at least once or twice a month, I'd say. Canada Day yesterday, people were using that as one of their videos, you know, to be Canadian and so on. And it is just one of my favorite tries of all time. And I just gutted about the game, the result that we had. We were, you know, we played such good rugby. We were leading quite a bit. And my old mate, rewind back to 2007, Glenn Jackson, the fly half, was the touch judge in that game. He actually screwed us out of that game, I think, personally. He made a terrible call. You know, Phil, you guys know Phil McKenzie. He made a terrible call saying Phil was out. We were going to score probably again or get at least 3 points. And Phil was about a meter away from the touchline. I don't know what he was looking at. But yeah, that changed kind of the game, the momentum of the game. They end up scoring and getting the win out of that. So you don't want to blame the refs, but I blame Glenn. that was a special year in terms of personal results that I was, you know, the way I was playing. But ultimately, it was a complete fail for Canadian rugby not winning a game. You know, we led against Romania quite easily, quite from the start of the game, and then fell away. So it's probably one that will haunt me forever, is that World Cup.
You've been quite outspoken, DTH, about sort of Canada needing to take that next step and wanting to beat those sort of tier one nations and get that result in the World Cup. But you talked about your personal aspirations there. In 2019, obviously you're drawn in a pool with New Zealand and South Africa. And I mean, were those two games special for two different reasons?
Yeah, they're obviously the best teams in the world, those guys. And that's probably the best out of the Americas. That's probably the best pool to have gotten is to play in that one, because we would have had Namibia in our pool, which is one that we would have targeted to win. And then you still had to take the confidence out of the Italy performance of 2015 into that pool as well. But they completely thrashed us in our first game. And then, you know, against New Zealand, South Africa, you're not, you know, trying to kind of just keep the score to a moderate number, really, but you don't want to say that, really. But so those were tough, but it's, for me, it was really special to play against South Africa, which ultimately was my last game as well. Fitting, not fitting, I don't know. That's another thing that's kind of brings you back to club rugby here. I'm not being able to finish off my career with Glasgow, but I wasn't able to finish my career off with Canada either.
Yeah, I was going to come on to that, DTH, and obviously it's a tough way to finish things up. I mean, you've had a brilliant 13-year international career, it's right in saying, 61 caps and 38 tries, if those stats are correct. But the way it ended in terms of the typhoon and what happened over in Japan, and obviously the bigger picture is a lot more important, which is shown by the way the Canada players reacted, because the cleanup efforts that we saw on ITV, the pictures that were being broadcasted back here were brilliant. But in terms of, for you personally, was there that small part of you that was frustrated and disappointed you didn't get to pull on the jersey for one final time?
Oh, 100%. I, like, to this day, I know I joked earlier with coming back to play for Canada again in the World Cup, but that's the one thing that, you know, keeps coming back to me. It's just like, I was not able to end on my terms. And I know everyone doesn't get to, because you know, fall out of selection or you get injured or something like that. So I shouldn't complain about it, but you know, you are a bit selfish in that way, that you want to finish on your own terms. And I was absolutely gutted. That's the one game I was really looking forward to. My family was, my parents were there for that game. And you know, to be able to share that game with them would have been, you know, unbelievable. My brother was there as well with his girlfriend. So, yeah, I was absolutely gutted waking up that morning. I remember waking up at like, I don't know, 6 o'clock or 5:30 in the morning, and looked on Twitter straight away, and it was, yeah, cancelled. And I just couldn't believe it. I thought this is some big April Fool's joke or something. But no, it wasn't. But in the end of the day, you know, there's a lot of people who lost their lives in that time. And you need to, you know, think it's just a rugby game. It's, you know, there's people who needed help at that stage. And I think, I know a lot of people say, yeah, you know, why'd you guys go and do that? Is it just all for show and stuff? But that's the true Canadian way. Like, we're good people. We care about people. And as soon as that opportunity was, you know, presented to the leaders group, we jumped right at it and said, you know, we want to do it. And we still made it optional. There's a lot of guys who wanted to obviously deal with the news in different ways. And it was never going to be, you know, made mandatory. So about half of the team went to it. Other half, you know, dealt with it their own ways. They had family in town they wanted to see and so on. So, you know, I took the opportunity to go and also, you know, get into the community in Gamaishi and see what the towns are like. But the devastation was just horrific. And but the pictures of the elderly that we helped, their faces, you can tell they had pain in their eyes, but those guys, they couldn't stop smiling with, you know, they just get on with it. They just knew that they need to get this job done, clear out the houses, carry out everything, mop it up, pick up the mud, whatever it took, you know. They've gone through this before, so they knew what to do. But yeah, it was tough to see. And especially like the older ladies who were out there without the husband, they didn't have help, and they would try and do things that were way too heavy for them. So it was great to be there to be able to help them.
Yeah, and just on Japan itself, DTH, I mean, we've only heard great stories about sort of player experience, and obviously what happened over there was really tough, and it was brilliant work that you guys did within Canada Rugby. But in terms of going over and playing in Japan, what was that kind of experience like? Because it was there was a lot of unknowns around it for a lot of people before the World Cup.
Yeah. If I didn't play in four World Cups, I would say it's my favorite one. But you know, New Zealand was really special because they love rugby there. But honestly, Japan, the culture there is amazing. The people are amazing. The rules there, the way they're structured and rules and all these things are, I loved it. Clean, people are respectful. The food is different, but good. But you know, you had to go in with an open mind and try different things, which was great. But I absolutely loved it. Japan's a great country, and they couldn't have made it any better. Like the setups of the fields, the teams, training venues, the makeshift gyms they put at every field that we were at, it was unbelievable. I was really taken back by how much work had gone into it and how much detail they paid attention to. So that was amazing.
And we mentioned it a couple of times on the podcast, DTH, but four World Cups for you, I think that puts you in esteemed company with a few other players who have been able to do that. Is that something that you, I know you say you don't like talking about personal accolades, but is that something you're holding really high regard for yourself? Because to reach four World Cups is quite the feat.
Yeah, no, you have to. Obviously, you train a lot of years to be able to do it. Your timing has to be correct. You know, you got to be young at the beginning and then be able to still play and make the team at an older age. So, and then injuries come into play with that. And I've had my fair share of injuries. So I think that, you know, luck's been on my side during those years. And, you know, I'm massively proud of what I've achieved with the Canadian jersey, and playing in four World Cups is, you know, something I'll cherish forever for sure.
And one of the things you said before that, you know, 2007, you don't really remember. Please tell me if this is wrong, but we said yesterday you had your hair dyed blonde for 2007. and you had your hair dyed then for 2019. Was there a good reason for that?
No, 2011 and 2019.
There we go.
Blondes, yeah. But it's a funny story. So 2011, just prior to that, everyone was hating on Justin Bieber, you know, big time hating on him. And I think he had bleach blonde hair at the time. We were sitting in Australia before the World Cup, and at Starbucks, and myself and Phil McKenzie and his brother Jamie were like, let's do something. We got nothing to do today, day off. We're like, let's go dye our hair. So off we went, and Phil and I dyed our hair, bleached our hair. And we said, well, our team really hated Justin Bieber at the time, and we kept playing his music and just to kind of play, you know, pranks with the boys. And then we're like, if we score, we make hearts, you know, a little heart, but I'll do one heart. He does the other heart on the field. And it kind of just took off. The media in New Zealand got a hold of it, and there's a few stories about it. And it was just a big old laugh, really, for me and him, an inside joke, you know, but nobody really knew what it was all about. And I had a lot of fun with it. And then it was actually my wife's idea for this time around. She was like, yeah, why not? It's your last World Cup. Just bring it back and put a poll out there to do it on Instagram. And yeah, people were like, yes, do it. And so, yeah, I went and did it. And it was good. I kept it for a while after as well here in Glasgow. So it was just good.
Rob, you'll have to get DTH to do another Loose Heads video singing Justin Bieber.
No way. Yeah,
I'm sure Crazy will like that.
And just finally, DTH, on a bit more a serious question to finish. We mentioned before about the development of Canadian rugby, and MLR has definitely been a major step forward in terms of that. My colleague Joe Harvey at Talking Rugby Union is very much passionate about the game over in America and Canada. Do you think that league is massively important if Canada are to take the next step and keep developing in the right direction?
Yes, 100%. I think that is our tool to success in North America, not just, you know, Canada. I want America to do well as well, and I want North America to do well, and you know, pull in Uruguay into that as well, because you know, a lot of their players is playing in the MLR. I think, you know, this is the third year, obviously was cut short, but the five games that they play, the level has gone up in the roof, through the roof. The players that have brought in different teams, you know, maybe some older guys, but you know, they bring in experience, they bring in work rate, and they, you know, get the younger guys to learn off of them. I think that's great for the MLR, but I definitely think that's the tool that we need to be jumping on as Canadians to. At the moment, we only have Toronto that's in it, but we've got all our players that are in the national team are playing somewhere in the MLR. So at least they get, you know, 15 high quality games, whereas they used to play club rugby in, you know, BCRU, which is good, but it's not. You know, can't step up from there to international rugby is what kills us in Canada. We can't expect guys to play from that level to international rugby. So I think it's a good starting point for the MLR, and I think it's going to grow year on year. And it's massively exciting the way it's all set up as well.
Absolutely. Absolute DTH. Well, it's been brilliant to go through your career with you and talk with you about sort of your affiliation with Loose Heads. But now we're going to go on to the next part of the podcast, which is your Mars 15. I'm fully expecting Justin Bieber to be on the ship towards Mars now. So I'll pass over to Mark for the section.
All right.
We have a collective term that we talk about quite a lot, about when people just have rugbyness. And listening to that hour of DTH, he's just rugbyness, isn't it? behind the bits that you tell us, I bet there's 100 stories that you can't tell us.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's brilliant. I could listen to it forever. But here we go. Here's the premise. The Martians have landed on Earth and challenged us Earthlings to a game of rugby to decide the future of civilization. We've lost the toss. So on Saturday, the shuttle leaves and it takes 4 weeks to get to Mars where we'll play. So this isn't necessarily a question about who's your dream team and all the rest of it, because they've got to be proper rugbyness people to survive 4 weeks with each other, plus the shuttle back, if they could remember it. There's 15 players. There's a manager, a coach, a water boy, and a kit man. But quite honestly, DTH's team, when I was a lad, Gareth Rees, who's about my age, was Canada's favourite son playing for Wasps in England. And who would have thought that he had that impact? He brought Canadian rugby here. DTH has kept that candle burning. So I think your World 15, your Mars, a team to play Mars away, is going to span the ages. So over to you.
See. Right, so should I give my team I've picked is, right, I don't know what's happening in Mars. I don't know who these guys are that we're playing. So I'm going for ultimate toughness, guys who can throw a punch, because we might be playing old school rugby here. I've got a couple guys who are good at traveling, keep us busy, because it obviously, like you said, it takes 4 weeks to get there, was it? And I've got a smart guy who can, you know, dissect things on the run, you know, can change the game plan for us. So I'll start with my prop, number one, Ollie Kebble. I've got a lot of time for him. Obviously a teammate here in Glasgow. I think for the party afterwards, he's my man. That's why I'm taking him. Pat MacArthur, old teammate of mine from Glasgow. Again, tough guy, but he's a good-looking front row. So, you know, I don't know, the girls in Mars might be looking for a bigger guy. So he's the good-looking hooker for us. Then I'm bringing someone who everyone will be petrified of, and that is Rod Snow from Canada, who also played at the Dragons. Then my old mate, Jeb Sinclair. Now, every team needs a dummy. He's the guy we're going to send in first if anything goes wrong in the field. He'll probably get knocked out. And then we'll bring in the enforcer, Jamie Cudmore, who's my second rows.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then
he can certainly throw a punch.
Yeah, exactly. Now, my ultimate team I did with Looseheads actually has a few of these boys in it. So my back row stays pretty much the same with Chauncey O'Toole and James Cubby Boy Davies. Yeah. I think two different spectrums. Chauncey will give us a bit more height in the lineouts. Also a guy who's just, you know, relaxed on that 4 week trip we're taking. Cubby Tours is something he likes to organize, so he'll be a good guy for traveling there, come up with ideas to keep us busy. And then number eight, a guy who probably always starts things, doesn't always finish it, Ryan Wilson.
As he walks around his construction site.
Does that include roofs?
Yeah,
exactly.
He'll bring a few tools with him from the building site here, but obviously he's always a good time on the after party. bringing a bit of X factor in my halfback pairing will be Nico Matualu and Finn Russell. You know, you can expect those guys can do anything from anywhere. Obviously I'm in this team at 11. number 12 was Josh Matavesi. Now this is a long trip there. This guy brews his own beer. Not too bad of a rugby player, so I'm taking him for the good times there. My number 13 is Ben Lesage, Canadian center. Massive potential. Probably someone who's going to be playing in Europe one of these days as soon as someone takes a shot at him. But he's the brains behind the whole operation. I'll probably make him my captain just because he can think on his feet. He's a good defensive leader and so on. Jeff Hassler. I don't know if everyone's heard the story about Jeff. You know, this guy's quit rugby at Harlequins just to go sailing and get his sailing license. So this guy, he knows how to party and keep us busy. And then you always have to bring someone, I guess, who can scare off people when they look at him. And that's when I'm bringing Stuart Hogg. That guy is so ugly when he brings his game face. So Hogg is a fullback and he's not too bad of a rugby player. Now again, my coach is Sean Nineen, my first Glasgow coach. Yeah. He does not mind a pint of Stella. So, and he doesn't care about guys fighting on the field. So he'd be perfect for that. So he'd be good for on the field and also afterwards. My kit man is actually Dougie Mills Shizzle, we call him. Coco is also another nickname. He's our kit man here at Glasgow Warriors. The guy's 60 years old, maybe 65 years old. He's still more ripped than every single guy in our team. Like an 8-pack, he's a machine. But he kind of looks like Mini-Me from Austin Powers, so or Peter Stringer. Actually, he's a double of Peter Stringer, so yeah, he's a great guy to have on tour, and I've got a lot of time for him to spend time with him. Then my water boy and my manager is Jamie McKenzie, scrum half from Canada. The guy just likes to organize things, and so he'll be perfect to get us in the right hotels, right setup over there. And then the water boy would probably be assistant manager is Nick Frisby, he was Glasgow scrum half, Australian scrum half. That guy loves to party, and but it's a bit of a joke. He ran water for us this year pretty much every game because he was never able to get picked with Ali Price and George Horn. So he ran water, so he must be good at bringing on the messages. So that's my ultimate Mars team.
You're the second person to have picked Cubby Boy at 7.
Really? Yeah, no, he's a good time.
Yeah,
he's a good time. Like the guy just knows how to organize like parties and stuff, and that's something he wants to do. And he's a very good rugby player too.
Brilliant! Brilliant! I love it.
We'll have to clip up that bit about Stuart Hogg and send it to him, see what he comes back
with.
Yeah,
that's fine. That's fine.
That's fine.
His hairline hasn't really improved things, Rob. No, I'm just joking. I'm joking. Really joking, Stuart.
Oh, brilliant team. Brilliant team, DTH. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure to chat to you this afternoon. Yeah. All the best with everything going forward, DTH. We do hope we see you on the pitch again and scoring tries for fun as always. So DTH, thanks very much for giving us your time this afternoon.
That's a pleasure, guys. Thank you so much.
And as always, massive thanks to Mark, Rob and Dave for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And Dave, as always, just to finish off with a bit of the website, I've seen some great pictures on Instagram this week of people in Loose Edge Stash. It seems to be going well at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. Get yourselves over to looseedge.co.uk. If you enter code POD at checkout, get you 10% off. Make sure you tag us in your photos and we'll give them a share.
Brilliant, brilliant. Well, massive thanks again to DTH and to Dave, Mark and Rob. That's been another Loose Edge podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union.